Blog Talk Radio.
Weather today in the greater Cincinnati area.
I love you so badly, I could...
They're solid plastic, so don't settle for imitation.
But the senator, while insisting he was not intoxicated, could not explain his nudity.
Welcome to Ringside Wrap,
a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you the latest news and information on major pro wrestling and MMA promotions, the occasional history lesson, and interviews with legends of yesterday and stars of today. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Ringside Wrap.
Hector? Why? Because he had to go back to work and actually go and pay some bills. And, well, there's nothing wrong with that. So we've got a pretty good replacement. If Mike Mooneyham, who I don't know if he's here enough to actually, he should really lose his status now, but he's officially the fourth Beatle in the equation of the Ringside Wrap empire here. But we always love our fifth Beatle as well, and he joins us on the line right now from Ring of Honor Wrestling. The man who's making being 39 years old the number to be, Mr. Brutal Bob Evans. Brutal Bob, how are you?
Hi, Simp. How you doing?
Not too bad, man. Thank you for filling in for Les here on short notice.
Well, I know it's big shoes to fill, but I'll do my best. So how's your week been? I know we did have a chance to touch base over the weekend. Reproducing that conversation would probably get us both in big trouble. But let's use a more guarded version, shall we, while we still throw the news out to the fine people in podcast land.
Yes, so we will be safe, and actually we were going to be joined, I don't want to leave this out, at 8:30 by Jonathan Snowden, who is, his new book has come out, I cannot wait to see this, from ECW Press, Shooters, The Toughest Men in Professional Wrestling. And he'll be on to talk about that at around 8:30. And we're also going to be joined by Bobby Simmons, who's going to join us for the old school segment here coming up at about 9:30 or so Eastern time. But, Bobby talked a little bit on Saturday about some things. And really, I can start this off because we usually, when Les and I begin the show, obviously, as you know, we end up talking about Raw mostly. But since we have you on, because this is going to be a good time to start this thing off with Ring of Honor and you know, all the problems you're creating by becoming the big star. You're bigger. I heard Mike Bennett, I don't know, are there rumors that he is afraid that Brutal Bob Evans is going to eclipse him?
I think Mike Bennett is going to be just fine in this world. the Camp Prodigy is harmonious at this point, so which is unusual in professional wrestling, so we'll just keep it that way. But
especially with the Celtics winning right now, too, this is not a bad thing.
Yes, a big win. So hopefully they will wrap it up in six and not play the Game 7 deal.
They're going to win in six. See, finally, all of my Len Bias angst over all of those years being growing up in the Washington, D.C. area is now gone, and I cannot think of bigger heels than the Heat to root against.
Well, and also Sean Grandy is a big wrestling fan, and I've known Sean for about 15 years now. And Sean's two favorite wrestlers in Ring of Honor are actually me and Eddie Edwards. So he was quite conflicted the couple weeks ago. So, and we'll continue to be conflicted when that match airs on Ring of Honor TV. But I always enjoy Sean's tweets, and he does a great job announcing the Celtics games. And being tight with JR doesn't hurt. And you know, he actually has a lot of friends in the wrestling industry. So, but Sean does a great job on the games with Cedric Maxwell. So,
and I won't even lie, I'm rooting for a Boston Oklahoma City series so we can have it at some point from Sean Grande, Jim Ross, you know, right there together doing a game.
Absolutely, I think. Those guys, like I said, they're good friends, and Sean's always been a big supporter of professional wrestling, and like I said, a big supporter of mine. So he actually used to do the sports. He was the Sports Flash guy on WEI out of Boston, and I saw him at an independent show for Tony Rumble, and I dared him to mention my name the next day on the WEI update, and he did right in the middle of drive time. So I was world famous. If I probably would have been trending on Twitter if it existed in 1998. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, good, great guy, and an excellent announcer, and you know, couldn't be happier for him. But enough about that phony basketball. Let's talk about the wrestling. So
yeah, really, you got a full bank of things coming up here throughout June and July, and obviously, there's some stuff that's going to be coming up on TV you can talk about, but as soon as it was announced, everybody got happy because the first two matches have been so good. In a rematch now, of a rematch, going into the rubber match, Mike Bennett and Lance Storm has been announced, and I know you have to pay off a bet of coffee to Lance Storm, and Lance will be upset to know that there are no Timmy Hortons anywhere in the city of Baltimore, to my memory, so he's going to have to be drinking Dunkin' Donuts coffee. And you'll have to pay off that, but obviously excited leading into those, you know, this upcoming set of tapings, and you know, how you felt about that, obviously, and what are your feelings on how those matches have been, and how big they've been for Mike, and frankly, as well as how has Lance looked, because most people didn't get a chance to see, this has been the only times people have had a chance to see him, but you know, but behind the scenes, backstage, and how he carries himself in the whole nine yards, what's he been like in that Ring of Honor locker room?
Well, I was very impressed with, you know, personalities aside, I was very impressed by what Lance brought to the table as far as professionalism and being ready for his match and, you know, just being able to hang. I mean, Mike's 28 and, you know, Lance is in his 40s, 43, I believe. And you'll have to excuse me, I'm getting over a cold, so I sound quite down today, but I'm not at all. So, but Lance, I really thought he brought it to the table, and I really enjoyed the competitiveness of their first match. I wasn't able to get to Florida, but then when I got to see it close up in Canada, and I got to see the intensity that they brought to it, because the second one couldn't be a technical wrestling masterpiece, it had to be more of a fight. And I assume that match three will probably be the same way. But I was very impressed with Lance. I was very impressed with everything he brought to the table and how he composed himself in the locker room. And I can understand how the guy had a good career and represented himself real well. So, and I know Bennett is very grateful to have a chance to compete with somebody like that and have a chance to wrestle on somebody who's, you know, you never get better unless you wrestle people better than you and with more experience, which is what I tell a lot of the young guys around here is be the worst guy in every show you can be on, because that way you'll know you always have a chance to wrestle somebody better than you. So, but yeah, I thought Bennett held in real well. I thought he, and like I said, I thought Lance really brought it to the table, and I guess they've developed quite a mutual respect for each other. So I wouldn't say it's like, or, you know, I don't think we'll all be going out. And, but Lance did make that a double or nothing coffee bet for, if the board is cleared if we can win, so I may have to resort to a few extra diabolical tactics.
That's, you know, with the price of coffee nowadays, you know, you should do that.
I know.
Talk about the learning curve with Mike, and you know, a lot of expectations on him, and he seemed to hold up his end of the deal pretty much every time out. You know, putting him in there with Lethal and the guys he's feuded with and gone head up with, and Lance Storm now being the next example of that. And he's, you know, the three matches he's had or is having with him. But what do you learn from him, and what do other guys? What can they pick up from Lance backstage? And you've been in this for a long time, but you never stop learning. What are some things being around Lance, being a, you know, around a guy who you're, you haven't been around a whole lot before. What do you pick up from him? Is there anything where you go, okay, just little things that he lets off or that he talks about that you can pick up on, even though you've been in doing this thing for so long?
Well, no, I just I think and Les usually talks about this and speaks to this quite a bit, is the ability to put together a match or perform a match where everybody can understand it instead of maybe rushing or going too fast. I think that's where Lance's experience comes into play, and I think that's really what he showed over the past couple matches, where there was, it wasn't a big rush job, it wasn't a big boom, 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 spot after spot after spot. It was basically just, hit something, make you breathe, let it go. And as far as Mikey getting better or improving in Ring of Honor, I was the one that was talking about him, and I know you were an early fan because I converted you real quick, because I said it's basically going to come down to it, and I'm calling it now. I called it a year and a half ago, and I'm calling it again, because I talked to you guys right before we both got signed to Ring of Honor, and I said in a year and a half to 2 years, he's going to practically be a babyface, and if he's not a babyface in the front of the curtain, he'll be a babyface in the back of the curtain, and that's exactly what happened. What was the thing I said to you on Saturday? This is one of the things I can divulge, is I said, whenever you're worried about if you're not sure if somebody's good or somebody's not good, you ask the boys. And it seems like the common denominator in all these good matches Mike Bennett is having is Mike Bennett. I'm not taking anything away from the other guys, but I think Bennett's one of the most underrated wrestlers in the business. Pro Wrestling Illustrated said it themselves. So, not that Pro Wrestling Illustrated is the be-all, end-all of everything, but I bet if you took a poll of the guys in Ring of Honor, he'd probably be one of the unsung guys in the company.
Well, he's certainly one of the more underappreciated, and I think probably some of the reason, that happened was because the expectations of the traditional Ring of Honor fan, because there were a lot of them that held on through through the HDNet days,
sure.
Even the losses of Nigel and Claudio and Danielson and all that stuff, they stayed through, and Mike Bennett coming in and the way he was presented, the way you were presented, was this wasn't our guy. So obviously they hated his guts, and realistically, he started off on a higher plane than most people are going to give him credit for. It's just that it seems like he's digging out of a bigger hole because of that perception, and it's still, going to the tapings, too, and talking to people, there are still those Ring of Honor fans that have those perceptions of, he's really not our guy, and there's that obvious divide right now in Ring of Honor, where you have some of the older heads, the Steens, the Edwards, the Roderick Strongs, and then you have, the newer guys who have come in, and there's still champs on both sides, and I think that's what Bennett really suffers from the most, and it's really unfair, because when you do watch his matches, it's like, obviously, yes, he's not Shawn Michaels, he's not, been in the business for 30 years or anything like that and learned every single trick of the trade. It's a learning experience, but he's
sure.
A guy that I think this ROH fan should get behind in a lot of ways and give the respect to, because, obviously he was brought in with the character of, I'm too good for this, I'm passing through this on the way to WWE TNA, and you
right.
can look at Mike Bennett and see the presentation and know, hey, that's a real good chance that's going to happen one day. But you should be proud of that as an ROH fan, that he's earning his bones there and he's giving you your value there. I could be a little biased about this, but I think I saw it in Bennett at the very beginning, and I honestly believe that about the guy.
Well, and that's one of the things I kept trying to tell everybody, and that's one of the reasons we were brought into Ring of Honor, because Ring of Honor was always looked at as a one-trick pony, a one-note operation, and us as an organization, speaking for Ring of Honor, I can't talk for the guys at the very top, but I know that any company that wants to grow has to reach out to a wider variety of fans. Does that mean we sell out and we're Disney and everything is crispy clean? And no, obviously not. But we do have to appeal to a wider variety of people and a wider variety of wrestling fan. And to do that, you have to find a bunch of different people. Everybody, I was so shocked that the traditional wrestling fan would be against Bennett or against anybody, me or Lance Storm or somebody who's a little bit more traditional, because we've always talked about the three-ring circus aspect of wrestling, where you have the clowns and then you have the trapeze artists and then you have the jugglers, and we have a bunch of different acts to show people, but yet they still want this homogenized. It's a different homogenization, if that's a even a word, but that we criticize WWE and TNA for. You know, WWE has a certain style where we all complain that the guys have short haircuts and it's homogenized and this and that. And TNA's another way where it's the same kind of a thing. And then, but can't we pick on Ring of Honor for the same thing? If I want to look in the mirror, you know, I would say that would be my biggest, you know, critique, is that we do have a lot of similar guys. So when somebody else comes around, that's one of the reasons why I sat down with officials and said I'd like some matches, because I think I can bring something different to the table. And they agreed with me. So that's why things are starting to move in that direction. Do I want to take over the company? Do I want everybody fired and I get all the matches? No, I want to be a different spice to their meal. I don't want to necessarily be the meal. And if they let me do my thing, which they are, because that's, you know, Ring of Honor is obviously number one about letting people be creative and be themselves, you know, that's, I think it's really going to pay off. And they, I think they have to start really, really exploring the fact that they need a few different people, not necessarily different people, but we have to tell the guys to vary things up, you know, because that's just the way it's going to be, you know. And also, these guys, if we're going to get a busier schedule, they can't be wrestling this crazy style where they're going to get hurt all the time. It's different when you have a, you know, it's like a football game. It's a football game versus a baseball game. Football, you have, you know, I'll Sunday, play the game, play it like crazy, and I'll see you next Sunday, you know, or Thursday or whatever. But with baseball, you got to play every day. So you might not necessarily Cadillac it or take it easy, but you definitely prepare yourself in a different way. You definitely would perform differently. And I think these guys have to take it as, this is, you know, we want Ring of Honor to be a 3-4 times a week type thing, so we can all make some great money and all live what we want to do under our situation, you know, under the way we want to do it, instead of going to WWE and doing it maybe the way they want to do it. But to do that, you have to kind of be a little safer, a little smarter. I don't know if that's coming across to you, if you understand what I'm saying, but...
No, absolutely. It works on both sides too, because it works on both the, you know, the you know, wrestlers and guys you're talking about, and also as far as fans go too, because they sort of have the same problem. And actually, you know what? Before I even get into that too, I'll take a breath and allow you to take one too, and make Rich very happy, and that we can pay some bills with some commercials here. And I want to get back and kind of get into that a little bit too, because there's parallels to me that run between workers and fans, even, where, you know, you say you come from the 80s and the 90s, and these were your influences, yet you don't like a lot of the things that are taking place or guys coming in, and it's like, you can't really have it both ways. And it works for characters and a lot of things, but we'll get into that in a moment here after paying these bills on Ringside Wrap.
Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
Hi, I'm Jody Peterman. We know that no one understands what you need better than you do. We take care to guide you through the legal process, ensuring that you're able to make the decisions that are best for you. If you have a personal injury, criminal, or family law issue, please take a look at our website to learn more about our practice. We offer a free initial consultation for personal injury cases. Give us a call at 229-375-5680. We have a reputation for being accessible and treating our clients well. We look forward to hearing from you.
Hello, I'm Guy Terry of Terry and Peterman. At Terry and Peterman, we are committed to representing the hardworking residents of South Georgia in personal injury, criminal, and family law matters. For years, we have worked with college students in this area to ensure legal issues do not disrupt their academic careers. We also represent military families struggling with divorce and family law issues. We rely upon over 30 years of combined experience to provide aggressive representation for our clients.
Thank you. This is Miss Rachel from The Empire,
formerly known as Platinum Champions of Wrestling.
Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling
at the Academy Theater in Avondale State.
We're also at the Masquerade every month or so.
Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Championship Wrestling.
And you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire.
Formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling.
We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Rap. Mike Sempervivi joined by Brutal Bob Evans, filling in for Les Thatcher this week. And is that Huey Lewis playing us back in?
I think so.
Why can't Mike I'd like, you know what, I want to start picking the bumper music, including NWA Pro Wrestling's old theme. You know, the one with the guitar riff and the bass. I want that one, actually, is to be our some of our bumper music next week.
That, do you mean the one from Worldwide, that one?
No, not the Worldwide one. The answer is when they turned over from NWA Midland to NWA Pro.
We never got NWA Pro. We got Worldwide out of Channel 25 in Boston.
Yeah, Pro ended up being the B show. It was Bob Cottle and Johnny Weaver.
Right.
Was the original team then. I think it was Bob Cottle and Jim Ross after, because they had Cottle do, or they had... who was it? Johnny Weaver did the Weaver Lock story with Hiro Matsuda, Dusty Rhodes, and Lex Luger. And I think it was maybe Ross who took over, but in any event, I don't know any of that. Actually, you know what? I know what all of this has to do with what we were talking about before, and that's old school wrestling. A lot of people probably on the ROH roster grew up in the 80s and 90s, and I know there's a lot of fans that did too, or they claim that their inspiration came from that time, and they look back at Steamboat Savage matches, and they look back at all the colorful characters that they had, and they're, you know, you got your 31 flavors if you were a WWF fan of just a cross-section of everything.
Sure.
And, you know, that there are a lot of those guys are on the ROH roster now. A lot of those people say that they're Ring of Honor fans, and that are. I'm not saying that, you know, they wish they were. They are Ring of Honor fans. But they don't like to turn to, you know, how do I know? You know, and I know they've had Abdul the Butcher before, and they've had, you know, Abyss was in Ring of Honor before and things like that. But, you know, what's the difference between Mike Bennett and Abyss? What's the difference between, you know, having, you know, guys like that, Jay Lethal when he came back? And, you know, what's the difference of having those guys as opposed to a Mike Bennett, a Maria, and a Bob Evans? I mean, I'm sorry, if we want to balance out time eras and everything, I'll take that combination over Special K any day. That's just me. So, you know, you can't have it both ways where it's our thing, we don't want it to change, I like this stuff, but then you say, you know, you liked all of these things, and that's what made WWF such a success in the 80s, and it's something that ROH needed to do with Sinclair to try to reach a broader audience.
Well, yeah, and that's, you know, basically that's what I was speaking to when we had to go to break. But that's, you know, we have to reach out to a more mainstream audience, you know. I get, you know, and I understand that we're going to lose some fans along the way, and that's unfortunate because we don't want to lose any fans at all. But people grow up. People have families. People get different interests. You know, dare I say, some people actually grow out of wrestling. Some people leave wrestling and come back. Some people leave wrestling and never come back. So, you know, and some, you know, ROH could have been a fad that somebody had through college, and now that they have a job and responsibilities, maybe they don't go to it anymore. You know, or, hey, I was going out with this guy, and he really liked Ring of Honor, and now I'm not going out with him anymore, so I really have no reason to go to Ring of Honor. So there's two tickets gone, you know? I mean, there's a bunch of different reasons. Maybe they don't like the product anymore. Maybe they're following WWE closer because a few of those guys are in WWE now. You know, there's a bunch of different reasons. Or maybe they just don't like the product. I don't know. I can't speak to it. I like our product. I like our locker room. I think it's we're on our way. I think it's always going to be a work in progress. You know, we don't have the budget that a lot of the other companies do. Doesn't mean we're broke. Doesn't mean we're going out of business. It just means that we have to watch our pennies a little closer. And thank God that's not my responsibility because I'm not particularly good at that kind of stuff. But but it's something that you want to keep in mind is that we're doing all this on a budget that's significantly lower than some of these other companies. And we've still managed to, you know, we're still the most active people looking for talent. We've still produced and promoted the most young talent in professional wrestling over the past 2 years. We've used more talent from our training camps than WWE or TNA have combined. I know that for sure. You go to a Ring of Honor camp. I believe we're having one late this summer. You go to a Ring of Honor camp and you do well, you'll eventually make it. And you may not make it on the roster, but you'll make it to TV. We had two or three guys from the last camp that were on the last TV taping, and they did quite well for themselves, you know. Young Nick Westgate, who was at the first Ring of Honor camp, was a victim to Tommaso Ciampa this week, but, you know, Nick's one of my guys. And Nick got treated like everybody else. It took him a while to work his way in, and he did his job very well for Tommaso, and hopefully he'll get used again, you know. And there are people that are going to be used, as things move on. But we have they got to remember that this isn't a bunch of young guys all coming up at once, back like it was with Austin Aries, Nigel, Brian Danielson, these guys. Those guys have moved on, and they're doing great for themselves. You know, that's wonderful. You know, Nigel's still with us, but unfortunately he can't wrestle, but he's offering other things, you know. Austin Aries is doing great. Brian Danielson is doing great. Obviously, CM Punk's doing great. You know, I know Chris Hero and Claudio are doing well for themselves in Florida Championship Wrestling. Knocking
Tyler Black.
Yeah, trying to come up. Tyler Black, Seth Rollins, sure. and Dean Ambrose, who really wasn't a Ring of Honor guy, but kind of wrestled along with quite a few of those guys, is doing quite well for himself as well. So these are all guys that were, for the most part, aside from Dean, were developed in the Ring of Honor system. So you have to give it time. You have to let it grow. And, you know, nobody liked Bennett when he started. But nobody liked Michael Elgin either when he started.
Yeah.
And nobody liked Matt Taven when he started. And nobody liked Mike Mondo when he started. And Mike Mondo got half a standing ovation the last time he came out.
Hey, throw Ciampa in that mix.
Absolutely. I mean, Tommaso's taking a little while because he's, you know, Tommaso's a driven. I've known Tommaso since he was, you know, 19. I've known him for 5 or 6 years. And he's a driven. He's an animal. He is what he is. And he's driven and he's intense and he's not particularly pleasant and he's disagreeable. And you got to like him for him. But that's who he is. But no one's going to outwork him. I'll come damn close. Bennett will come damn close. A few other guys will come damn close. But Mondo's the same way. Mondo is the opposite on the attitude, where he's the sweetest, nicest guy in the world. But another guy who's driven in the gym, driven at watching tapes, these guys aren't going to be denied. You know, and if you're not a fan of theirs today, you'll be a fan of theirs tomorrow. And that's what I'm trying to tell people is just get on board now because it's only going to get better. It's not going to get worse. We have about three or four guys, and I talked to you about them. You know, nobody really that's ready to come up and seize the spotlight now, but we have three or four guys in the next year that are really going to surprise people and are coming up in the system and are really going to make an impact. So,
Bob, let me actually break in here, too, because we have about 30 seconds left.
Yeah, sure.
Before we go to a long break before we get Jonathan on. How is Tommaso doing? Because he was got diverticulitis, and that
yes.
can really take it out of you. How bad was it, and just how is he doing right now? Because, you know, him working, my brother had it. Obviously, we know what it did striking down Brock Lesnar. How's he doing?
He's doing much better. it wasn't as severe as like Brock Lesnar's or anything like that. He should have a full recovery, and with a couple changes in diet, he shouldn't have to deal with it again, hopefully. So that's the good news. Yes.
Good. We're going to be talking a lot more Ring of Honor stuff, a lot more about WWE, as well as talking to Bobby Simmons coming up here in the next hour. But coming up after this break, we're going to have on Jonathan Snowden so he can talk about his book, Shooters, The Toughest Men in Professional Wrestling, when we come back on Ringside Rap.
Hey, this is Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers for Rad. I'm here to remind you that drunk drivers are still a major killer of young adults in this country. So always choose a designated driver, and remember, music lives, you should too.
Getting born in the state of Mississippi, Papa was a copper and a mama was a hippie.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, Rad, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Some statistics are surprising, some are unbelievable, and some are simply unacceptable. Right now, nearly 30% of U.S. students aren't finishing high school. Nearly 30%, and that's the average. In many places, it's even higher than that. And fixing it is a responsibility that we all share. This is President Obama, and I urge everyone, not just parents, but friends and neighbors and family members, to take responsibility for encouraging the high school students in your communities, to support them, challenge them, push them a little, and do whatever it takes to help them make it through. Because this is one statistic we simply can't afford to ignore.
You can do your part by going to boostup.org and sending an email, a text message, or even a wake-up call to a student at risk of dropping out. Go to boostup.org and provide the boost that's needed to make it to graduation. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
You want to know one of the best ways to help kids do better in school? Hi, I'm Travis Tritt. I visit a lot of schools both at home and when I'm on the road. Unfortunately, I hear from too many students, "Oh, school's so boring." And I say to them, "Then you haven't taken enough music courses." You know, exposure to music opens up the mind like nothing else. It improves something called spatial IQ, which in turn helps students tackle the challenges of other things like math and science. Some night this week, sit down as a family and play for your kids some music that just really turns you on. And then listen to what your kids like. Compare notes. Keep an open mind. Find the common ground.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, Gibson Guitar, Baldwin Piano, and this station. March is Music in Our Schools Month. Music, part of a sound education.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
This heavyweight bout is about to begin.
What's the champ wearing? Looks like an examination gown. And from the back...
Ooh, that's not pretty.
Champ, what's with the get-up?
I've got to take care of my family, so I'm getting those important medical screens.
The fight is over! Champ, you look pretty healthy out there tonight.
But I'm still getting those tests. For a list of tests you need, go to AHRQ.gov. And remember, real men wear gowns.
Go to AHRQ.gov. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AHRQ, and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Rap. Mike Sempervivi, joined by Brutal Bob Evans. And joining us on the line right now is a man who, much like myself, has been reporting on and analyzing the wacky worlds of professional wrestling and mixed martial arts for quite a number of years. But, unlike myself, has got credentials and talent to back it up with. And he adds to those credentials with his new book, Shooters, The Toughest Men in Professional Wrestling, which is available right now through Amazon.com in both paperback and electronic form. From BleacherReport.com, we'd like to welcome Jonathan Snowden to the program this evening. Jonathan, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me.
Now, the last time we had you on, you were talking about the MMA Encyclopedia, which was your second effort after the critically acclaimed Total MMA book. In this third one, you tackle a subject that has had obvious impact on today's MMA, but was rooted in the colorful world of professional wrestling, which at one time was very much like today's MMA. So how did this whole project come about?
Well, it's been something that's interested me for a long, long time. I mean, a lot of us, you know this, Mike, a lot of longtime wrestling fans, it's kind of like a dream scenario, like who would win if the matches were real? That was a question that was constantly asked for years and years and years, and it intrigued me as well. And so I've kind of always had this in the back of my mind, you know, to write a book or an article, actually. It started as an idea for a magazine pitch, for a magazine article about who these real-life tough guys, the wrestling guys who were legitimate going all the way back to the 1880s forward. Because, you know, we all know that these wrestlers in a lot of ways are responsible for the formation of mixed martial arts. You know, a lot of the credit goes to Brazilian jiu-jitsu guys, but really it's an offshoot of professional wrestling, and I thought that was interesting, and I thought it was worth exploring the idea that for more than a century you could make the argument, I think, that a professional wrestler at any given time was the toughest man in the world, and I thought that was worth talking about.
Now, you could have started this whole journey as early as like pre-biblical ancient Greek times with Milo, if you so chose, and really, frankly, you also could have started it, you know, as late as Frank Gotch if you wanted to as well, and really probably not miss much of a beat. You chose to begin it with William Muldoon, who was a legendary military presence turned police officer, basically turned American wrestler, who was one of the first to probably realize that the perception of toughness going around can sometimes go a lot further than the real deal itself. How did you settle upon Muldoon and not a former Burns or somebody like that as your main starting point?
Well, yeah, absolutely, you're right. And when we initially conceived of this idea, originally it was going to be a book that was co-written by my MMA Encyclopedia co-author, Kendall Shields, who had to drop out of the project. So when we came up with this idea, we thought a lot about, you know, talking about wrestling in the Bible, talking about Milo Croton, who you mentioned, who is, you know, the legendary Greek wrestler, talk about Greek Pancration, and, you know, basically every culture has a wrestling tradition, and we thought a lot about going back and talking about all that. But at some point, then, you're looking at a book that's 1,000 pages long, and it seemed to make sense, then, to focus in on America, you know, because we're proud Americans. I am, at least. Kendall was Canadian, but you know, we wanted to talk about the American wrestling champions as kind of our starting off point, which is how we started with Muldoon, who, you know, was kind of an early pioneer in not just professional wrestling, but in professional athletics. Before Muldoon and guys like this in the 1880s, there wasn't really a professional class of athletes in any real sense. And what made that possible, you know, you could go into a lot of details about the growth of cities and the Industrial Revolution and these population centers making it possible to have professional sports. I'm not going to bore you with all that, but anyway, the fact that there's these large urban centers allows somebody like Muldoon to make a living as a professional athlete, and then that's exactly what he did. And as you mentioned, you know, a lot of people think like, oh, in the old days, wrestling was real, it was 100% real, and of course, Muldoon, as our first champion, is an example of how that's absolutely not true. I mean, he was a guy with a gimmick. He had a Roman gladiator gimmick. He instituted time limits. He did a lot of work matches. And you know, they would go on tour, and he would do these things called plastic poses where he would pour white paint all over himself and kind of stand there like he was a Roman, like a statue of a Roman god, and he would allow ladies to feel his muscles and all this stuff. Like, you know, he was a straight gimmick. And it started that way, and wrestling kind of had that gimmickry in it from the very beginning.
In your research of doing things, you know, you bring up Muldoon and the fact that, you know, a lot of what he was a straight gimmick. Were you able to, and this is a hell of a question to try to ask you, but were you able to get any kind of starting point as far as when the works kind of started with these real athletes? Because it's easy to latch on to the time of the traveling circus and the traveling medicine show and all that sort of stuff is going, okay, that's probably a good time when guys went around and realized that they could fleece people from city to city and work their magic from city to city. But, you know, there's... It seems to be not much time between that and the Civil War era where guys would throw themselves and use it to relax as well as use it in combat training, just, you know, hand-to-hand type of stuff. Did you see any divide or any kind of tangible point where you go, okay, these guys actually learned where to work it?
It's really, I mean, you are talking about work from the beginning, and that's the one thing I noted is that, and it wasn't even secret. That's what's amazing about this, Mike, is that, you know, wrestling is just resilient. Like the idea of people wanting to believe it's real is just an idea that's resilient. Because even when you go back, in the book we have like an article from the Brooklyn Eagle, all the way back in the 1870s, talking about how Professor William Miller and Bauer and Muldoon were kind of working matches in the saloons. And this stuff is reported again and again with pretty much every established wrestling name that there's ever been. You know, there's been newspaper exposés. The bottom line is people don't care, and it didn't seem like it. You know, they continue to go to the matches, and I think that there was some work at all points because it was a spectator sport, and it was more importantly than that, people were laying down bets on these matches. So when, once money is exchanged and people are betting on who the winner and loser is, there's a lot of potential for corruption, and that's what I think we saw all the way back to the very beginning.
You talk a lot, and I've seen the beginning of the book about those American wrestlers and goes through the catch-as-catch-can style and the stories of Frank Gotch and down the line into Danny Hodge and such. And then you start to bringing in a different aspect, which is Mitsuya Maeda, who is a name that I guess I'm not super surprised that today's MMA fan really doesn't know who it is because we're in such an overloaded culture and maybe they heard the name and it doesn't stick and it hasn't been driven home because there's no one to really drive it home. But how does his influence, because you talk about him first when you start switching from the American style, can you tell us a little bit about Maeda and what his influence really is? Because people don't realize that everybody gives Helio Gracie credit, but in the dojo where Mitsuo was actually, you know, where Maeda was actually showing these guys in the Gracie family, you know, tips about judo and jiu-jitsu, Helio wasn't actually able to compete. And it's amazing he gets the credit, yet the guy who taught the family it kind of is very unsung.
Yeah, it's true. Maeda is someone, he's an obscure figure in some sense, and a lot of that is by design. And that's because of the Gracie family, which you mentioned, the patriarch of Hoyce Gracie and Horion and Hickson Gracie, who would become MMA stars in the 1990s, was Helio Gracie. And you know, they wanted you to believe that this Gracie Jiu-Jitsu that they were selling tapes of and they were selling instructionals and they were selling lessons and they were selling the UFC, that this was something new that they had kind of created, or they had learned some secret version of Japanese Jiu-Jitsu, when really what they learned was judo from Maeda. He was a straight judo guy. He was a Kodokan black belt, and he was sent to America, to New York in 1904, specifically to help spread judo worldwide. The Gracies would tell you, like, oh, he's teaching us these secrets that no one is supposed to know, when in fact this guy's job was to spread judo across the world. So, you know, the whole thing, there's a myth about the Gracie family that they've wanted to keep a hold of, and that's probably why we don't hear that much about Maeda. But, you know, he's an interesting guy who came to New York in 1904 to try to help spread judo to America. By 1905, he had gone completely off track. He was in Selma, Alabama, of all places, and he was a professional wrestler. So there is a connection between Maeda, not just to judo, but also to professional wrestling, which is how he made his living for pretty much his entire adult life. He was a barnstormer, a wrestler who went to England, to Scotland, to Belgium, Cuba, Mexico, Spain, and then finally to Brazil. where he ended up settling for the rest of his life. And that's where he taught Carlos Gracie, who was Helio Gracie's brother, taught him judo for 3 or 4 years. And, you know, the rest is of course, history. The Gracies continued to practice. They focused on the groundwork and developed what they call Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, which we now call Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And you know, really, mixed martial arts comes from that in a lot of ways. But ultimately, when you look back, it comes from Maeda, which means it comes from a judo and professional wrestling background.
Now, I'll throw out one more question before I let Bob jump in here, as I'm sucking all the air out of the room here. But I've always been an incredible apologist for Danny Hodge. I love doing this show. One of the reasons why is you get to talk to a lot of these guys from the old school. And I, you know, had the Sports Illustrated with him on the cover, and he was always one of those guys in the Afro magazines growing up where they talk about the old school, and it was just like junior heavyweight champion Danny Hodge, and I wasn't a huge guy or anything, didn't realize how, you know, small a lot of wrestlers actually really were in all reality, but I was always fascinated with Hodge. And, you know, you start getting into the Billy Robinson era and the Snake Pit, and you start talking about that stuff, but I'll always take the amateur wrestler, and I'll always take Danny Hodge over anybody, including Lou Fez. When talking to people about the book, at the end of the day, when you were going through research, did you ask them, okay, well, who is the one guy you take? Or were there guys who were vehement or about anybody or anything like that?
You know, like you, Danny Hodge is, of course, a legend, and anybody that worked with him or saw him or had the, you know, fortunate privilege of being on the mat with him in a competitive situation, all spoke very highly of him. I mean, he's amazing. In 1957, I think he pinned like 19 guys in a row in the NCAAs. He's a guy that not only was undefeated as a college wrestler, but no one ever even took him off his feet. It's pretty remarkable. He won a silver medal in the Olympics only because they essentially cheated him out of the gold medal. And then he went from there to being a national Golden Gloves boxing champion without ever having boxed before. In the course of 1 year, he went from being an NCAA wrestling champion to being a Golden Gloves boxing champion. I mean, just a remarkable athlete. Even into his 70s, you could see him. I met him at the NCAA tournament, and he could still crush an apple in his bare hand. You know, he's just an amazing man, and I wouldn't have wanted to put money against him, you know, for anybody. He's a pretty tough guy, and he would have been amazing in today's MMA had he wanted to do that, which I'm sure he would have.
Bob?
Well, actually, this is a really interesting topic, and congratulations on the book. For the almost 21 years I've been doing professional wrestling, I can tell you that I definitely don't belong in that book. the list of a million shooters, I'd probably finish about 2 million, but I've recently developed a lot of respect for, not that I didn't have respect for it before, but actually it's been one of the guys in our company, Shelton Benjamin, very prominent collegiate wrestler, and one day we were just hanging around, and I won't mention this guy's name, but there was one of our heavyweight wrestlers that was a pro and decided that he might be able to challenge Shelton and try to get him off his feet, and really it was an exercise in futility. Shelton just was able to defend him, and the man, he probably outweighed Shelton by about 30 or 40 pounds, and but Shelton was just handling. He wasn't hurting him because they were friendly, but it was, I marveled at the ease in which he had handled the man. And so I asked Shelton a couple weeks ago, actually one of our Ring of Honor events, I said, hey, can you show me some stuff that I could use in one of my matches, something where you could use some sweeps or something like that? And it was just so fascinating, just being a part of that and just being able to, him just being able to manhandle me and put me anywhere he wanted to. And this, some of the techniques was just really fascinating, but I found it to be really cool. Were there any surprises in the book? Was there anybody who you hadn't anticipated, you know, making the list or making, you know, a category of shooter or a tough guy, maybe somebody kind of snuck up on you or somebody that you hadn't really researched that much, and then they kind of like, wow, here's this guy. He really impresses me.
Well, you know, there's guys that like that. who I maybe didn't know as much about. I mean, I had heard their name, but one of them that springs to mind is John Pesek, who was a policeman is what they called it back in the olden days. And the way it worked is they established a wrestling trust, which is basically just like a promotion. They went around the country, and their wrestlers all wrestled with each other, and they had a champion who was Strangler Lewis, and they made a lot of money. But then on the outskirts of that, you had guys called truck busters. These were legitimate shooters who wanted to be a part of the wrestling company and maybe weren't. So they would go around to the city the wrestlers were in and say, hey, I can beat Strangler Lewis, or I can beat this guy. He's not really that tough. And so what the wrestling company needed to have was a policeman, and that's where a guy like Pesek would come in. And he was the tough guy of the wrestling trust, of the wrestling promotion. He was the guy they would throw out there. If somebody said, hey, I can beat these fake wrestlers, they'd say, okay, why don't you beat him? And it's pretty remarkable, some of the stories about him and guys that would wrestle him and come out the worse for the wear. He would hurt guys. That was his job, and he was good at it. He submitted and tore the knee ligaments of Nat Pendleton, who was an Olympic silver medalist. He beat all kinds of guys. He beat the champion Joe Stecker in a shoot match that was not supposed to be a shoot. that happened in Los Angeles when they, you know, a lot of times this would happen. There would be different factions, and you know, a guy would turn on his faction. He would turn to the other side, and then there'd be a shoot match. You wouldn't want to be on the opposite side of John Pesek when that happened. So he was a guy that I knew some about, but I didn't realize that he was probably arguably the toughest guy in professional wrestling history. So that was he was interesting to learn about.
Now, kind of fast-forwarding into the 70s, and this is going to be kind of a loaded question, but since I kind of got my start at a very weird time as far as covering New Japan, K-1, Pride, I was able to do it in around 2000, 2001. And one thing that always amazed me in doing the research and trying to get better at what I was looking at was the story of Antonio Inoki. And I would always kind of throw out the question, and I want to throw it out to you, because the sports, even though there would be people vehemently against them, because of the way the sports are all married in, could you do a ultimate MMA Hall of Fame and not put Antonio Inoki and Nobuhiko Takada, but especially Antonio Inoki, in it, because he was able to convince world-known athletes to actually show weakness and for money and to put him over? And where does Inoki stand as far as great tough guys, and what did you learn in the process of hashing, and I know you had to do this with the MMA books as well, but hashing out where Inoki stands.
I loved writing the Inoki chapter. I think he's a fascinating guy, and like you, as a wrestling fan, I've always been interested in everything that he does, because he's such a charismatic and dynamic presence. A combination of Hulk Hogan and Vince McMahon, if they were one person, you know, it would be Antonio Inoki, at least in that culture. And it's really, you know, how he came about with the idea of being the World Martial Arts Champion is interesting in its own right. The truth is that he was losing a wrestling war to Giant Baba, who had all the advantages. You know, not only was he an amazing physical specimen, and people were obsessed with him in Japan just because of his size, he also had the official backing of the National Wrestling Alliance, and all the most famous Western wrestlers would come and wrestle for Baba in all Japan. And Inoki was really in a bad place. He was not going to win that battle. And he went in a different direction. He couldn't compete head-on that way with Giant Baba. And so he decided he was going to be the World Martial Arts Champion. And everyone knows about the match with Muhammad Ali, but before that he had actually beaten Wilhelm Muska, who was a gold medalist in judo, and he beat like a slew of guys after that in a variety of martial arts. So he really is the inspiration, at the very least, of modern mixed martial arts in Japan. I mean, when you hear the guys talk about it, the Japanese wrestlers talk about what inspired them to be shoot-style wrestlers, Inoki almost always is, he goes back to Inoki in his match with Ali and his other matches with martial artists from a variety of styles. So he's so important in the formation of martial arts. You'd think that he would have to be in a Hall of Fame, if only in some kind of like honorary or promotional sense. Now, you know, you, as an athlete, maybe not, because Fatih Ali match, there, you know, you're not really sure that he was involved in any shooting matches. But, you know, as a person that inspired the entire industry, of course, you know, they don't get much more important.
How much, now, there was always the story, well, it's not a story, it actually happened, it's on YouTube, of him breaking, I think it was India or Pakistan, I can't remember, the wrestler's arm there. How did that play into his legacy? And as going through the novel, how did, like, post the brutal age of, like, you know, the 30s, where peacemaking, guys like that needed to be policemen, were stories of guys breaking people's arms and fist fights in bars and things like that, how much did that play into the toughest men legacy as far as the book goes?
Yeah, you're right. You kind of hit us. And to address your first question, I didn't really touch on that too much with Inoki. I mean, it's never clear with some of these matches whether that was a shoot or if it was, if he actually broke the guy's arm or what that would mean in any kind of substantive way as far as judging whether he was a tough guy or not. That didn't really fit with kind of the narrative I was taking. So, you know, I focused on Inoki more as kind of being the founding father of mixed martial arts more than what may have happened in a match in Pakistan. But there is that kind of gray period where you go from the time when there were shooters to a time, and it really was really early. Ed Lewis, even in his era in the 1920s and 30s, I mean, wrestling was pretty much a complete show by then. They brought in Wayne Munn and Gus Sonnenberg and Dan O'Mahony, guys who were just pure wrestlers. Like, you know, they were inventing high spots, you know, the football tackle and things like the Irish whip of all things, you know, things that you see all the time in wrestling matches now were big high spots. Those were big finishers, the Irish whip of all things. And that was 1935 when they came up with that. Basically, Goldberg's gimmick was done by Dan O'Mahony in Boston, his 50th win. He had 50 wins in a row. The 50th was over Jim Lundis for the world title in front of 25,000 at Fenway Park. So that, you know, everything new is...
Ironically enough, Bob was there.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I had my college graduation there the same day. What's wrong with you?
That's awesome. I'm glad you could see that moment in history. But, you know, everything that we think is new in wrestling, from Bill Goldberg's streak, you know, all that stuff has been done before and done well. So that, but anyway, I got way off track. The point is that, yeah, you're right, that there's no really, it's hard to judge these shooters during that period before mixed martial arts, you know, who was good. You know, a lot of it is just kind of, it's rumor and what guys did in the locker room or in gym shoes and stuff like that. It's just, you know, so I kind of tried to focus on guys that had amateur backgrounds, whether it was Kimura, Carl Gotch, who had been an Olympian, Jack Briscoe, guys who you could say, Dima Bell, who had an early mixed martial arts match with Milo Savage in 1963. I mean, guys that you could point to being legitimate athletes, those are kind of guys I focused on, because you couldn't really point to anything, you know, any competitive matches for the most part, because it was all work, so.
You know, believe it or not, I think if I had to choose a Mount Rushmore, even though I love Danny Hodge so much, the first face, to me, would still have to be Kazushi Sakuraba, because Kazushi Sakuraba in his prime, you put him up against any style of a man, any size, and I just, for anybody that ever saw him, you can't bet against this guy. And even though his career has gone on way too long, and the brutal beatings that he took in Pride and continued on with, it played a heavy toll on him, and not a fun story anymore. Most of the people listening don't know who he is. Can you give a quick little thing on who Kazushi Sakuraba was and why so many people who are hardcore MMA fans, for all these new fans out there, look at him as, you know, the gold standard?
Yeah, absolutely. And for catch wrestlers, when I talk to kind of the modern movement of catch wrestling with guys like Jake Shannon from scientificwrestling.com, even people like Josh Barnett, who's an MMA fighter who practices some catch wrestling, the guy that they consistently point to is, you know, hey, this guy proves that catch wrestling works in modern mixed martial arts is Kazushi Sakuraba, who was a college wrestler who was, you know, kind of had a lot of talent. He beat Oda, who was a 1996 Olympic bronze medalist in freestyle wrestling. He beat him in a wrestling match in college. He's a guy who had talent but didn't really know how to apply himself. You know, even back then as a young man, he was drinking and smoking and going out all the time. And he really didn't find his calling until he joined the UWF, which was a shoot-style wrestling promotion. He just made a call. A friend of a friend of his was Takahashi, who ended up being one of the founding fighters in Pancras. He kind of knew one of Takahashi's friends, and through that he ended up in the UWF iDojo. And this was just what he was meant to do, submission wrestling and mixed martial arts fighting. I mean, he was just an amazing fighter, constantly outsized. He was undersized in almost every match he ever had. He took his UFC debut against Conan Silvera, who is a giant 250-pound heavyweight. He took it on 4 days' notice after he had been out drinking for two nights, and he won. He ended up winning the match. He beat four different Gracies, which was unheard of in early mixed martial arts. He beat Hoyce, Henzo, and High and Gracie. He beat all those guys, and they called him the Gracie Hunter. So in Japanese mixed martial arts culture, he definitely hasn't been forgotten. I mean, he's one of the formative figures of the Pride Fighting Championships and just a huge star on a level that very few of our MMA fighters have ever reached. So, you know, when you look back at can-catch wrestling work as a submission art in mixed martial arts, Sakuraba is the guy that you can point to and say, yes, the right athlete can make it work, and because he did. You know, like you mentioned, he was one of the greats.
Now, I have to pull up the date and tweet it out and put it up on our site later on. For a lot of people out there, if you want to see a good shoot-style professional wrestling match, Kiyoshi Tomura and Josh Barnett had one of the last really good ones I can remember from U-Style, if I'm not mistaken, in the early 2000s. And I'll have to put that up, too, because I know there's a lot of old-school fans and old-school wrestlers that listen who aren't into the Japanese scene, don't necessarily know who these guys are, but it would probably be something that they would want to check out and enjoy. And I'll just throw in a quick little, you know, self-serving comment here on the fact that I've always been upset that the obstreperous man in red pants, Kiyoshi Tomura and Sakuraba, were never able to get it on in their primes in Pride. Tomura, I know Dave Meltzer always hypes him up as the last, you know, the greatest worker he's ever seen as far as making a real match look fake or vice versa, however you want to say it. Where does he stand? Because he seems like one of those guys, as time goes on, he's going to get forgotten about. He did good work.
Yeah, and, you know, I didn't really help that much for him because I didn't really include him very much in this book. And you know, I've actually pitched a sequel to this book, and he's one of the wrestlers I'd like to focus on because he was one of the great workers of all time, like Dave Meltzer and like you were mentioning. I mean, Kiyoshi Tamura's matches with Volk Han and Tsuyoshi Kosaka and Josh Barnett later. I mean, he just had a tremendous. I mean, he was so good at making a work match look like he was real, and his mat work was incredible. And then when Rings, which was the promotion he worked for, when it became real matches, he was able to transition so well. I mean, he went to a draw with Frank Shamrock, who was arguably the best fighter in the world at the time. He beat Jeremy Horn. He beat Pat Miletich, who were top UFC fighters. He was a great real fighter, you know, not quite as good as he was a professional wrestler, but he certainly he didn't embarrass himself. And that's a lot more than you can say for most of the Japanese pro wrestlers who went into MMA in some form or another. You know, it was ugly for most of them, but Tamura was the real thing. And, you know, he was impressive.
John, you've been so good with your time, but I got to ask you about two recent articles that you wrote up on Bleacher Report as well. You know, one of my favorite guests here, the inimitable J.J. Dillon. When he starts talking, I just kind of fall into my chair and listen, like, you know, the man telling a story by the fire. He's just so incredible, and you had a chance to talk to him about his emotional night at the Hall of Fame and having a short but powerful moment with Vince McMahon, who he hadn't seen in years, as well as Dusty Rhodes, who he had friction with, and he ends up having a long emotional public moment with Dream as well. Just talk about that, because that was a really, really good story that's up there right now that people can look at.
It was great for me. I'm best known for writing about mixed martial arts, but my hidden secret is that at heart I'm a pro wrestling fan, especially of guys like J.J. Dillon and people that I grew up with as a kid in South Carolina. The NWA, that was where it was at for me. So I grew up with J.J. and the Four Horsemen, and to be able to talk to him at such length was amazing. I mean, the interview, a lot of it was for my next book, which is going to be about the 1980s wrestling war. So we talked at length. But, you know, once we got comfortable with each other, he told me this story about the Hall of Fame and what it meant to him to get a chance to close the door the right way with Vince McMahon and Dusty Rhodes, who had meant so much to him professionally and who he had a falling out with. He was so open and honest, and it meant so much to me that he was able to share that, and I was able to share it with the readers. So it was one of my favorite stories I've done for Bleacher Report. So I'm glad you had a chance to see it.
Now, I like this one a little less. But, of course, because I got to have some conflict with you. I mean, being a member of the Wrestling Observer Empire, you know, that there's people there that just love stirring up things. So I'll be one of them this time around. BJ Penn, Rory McDonald, the most recent article that you put up there about BJ Penn coming out of retirement. And yes, I know he lost to Diaz, and he should have lost to Fitch, and Frankie Edgar was his kryptonite. And I... Kostyuzu went to do the job in a lot of ways to Ricky Hatton in Manchester, England, in a fight he didn't need to take. De La Hoya built up guys and was kind of basically he was the conduit to why Pacquiao and Mayweather fight on pay-per-view for the numbers they do now. He did the jobs for them, and in a way did it for Bernard Hopkins as well when they were starting up Golden Boy together, just conveniently right after that. BJ Penn, to me, even though he is past his prime, doesn't seem like a guy that, at least I'm fear about, obviously not to the level of a Sakuraba or anything like that, but I don't feel as though that I'm fearing for him in this, and that he could still possibly, obviously maybe it's only for a year, maybe have a couple of fights where he can make some money before he rides out in the sunset, and essentially, even though the hardcore MMA fan hates to hear this, kind of does the job for Rory McDonald. I mean, what's the worst that happens? He wins. Where do you fall on that, and why do you think it's such a bad idea for Penn to come out and it being such a sad story like so many other boxers and fighters?
Well, yeah, it's interesting because I noted in the article, of course, that this kind of matchmaking is typical. You know, it's not unusual, and I'm not angry about it, and I don't think it's awful in any way. I mean, it's standard, especially we as mixed martial arts fans, we've learned it from boxing more than anything. It's what old fighters do. They lose to young fighters. And I think that's important, and I agree with you that it doesn't hurt anyone to a point. And I think BJ Penn already did that with Frankie Edgar. So now, you know, what you're looking at is, okay, well, how much of Penn do you want to use up as a human being is what you have to look at. And part of what inspired me, I think, a little bit was an interview I did earlier this year with Chuck Liddell, who was one of the UFC greats, who I think hung on a little bit too long. And it's just in those last couple of fights where you hang on too long that I think that you can really lose a lot of your future, like as far as your brain functioning and stuff like that. Like it becomes very dangerous as you head towards your mid-30s to be a professional fighter, especially if you're BJ Penn. And maybe, you know, you don't train like you should have. BJ Penn hardly trained that much when he was younger. Now, even his mid-30s, it's even, you know, it's even harder to get him motivated. You know, it's worrisome. You know, I thought it was kind of nice that BJ Penn went out the way he did when he was still, you know, he could still be proud of his performance. While I understand it's valuable for the UFC, and it's certainly valuable for Rory McDonald to beat BJ Penn, you know, it was just my idea that BJ went out at a good time for BJ. And, you know, if he does get carted off against McDonald or whoever the next guy is and the next guy after that, that's when it had been a shame that he didn't stay retired. That's just my idea. Of course, you know, he's a grown man and he can make his own decisions, and I just hope they're the right ones.
Not a grown man, but not a grown-ass man like my main man, Don Fry, who hopefully at least gets a mention in that Shooter's book and I cannot wait for ECW Press. I know that's on its way with some other ones that I can't wait to read from them, too. And Jonathan, I own the first two books, and they are fantastic. And best of luck with this one. And I really hope you get a chance to come back on before the book about the 80s comes out as well. Hopefully you can do it a lot sooner than that.
Absolutely. I love talking about professional wrestling, as you can tell. You ask me a question, I'll go on for 5 or 10 minutes. So, yeah, anytime you guys need someone, when a good guest falls through, you can give me a call.
God, you know, we got to figure out a way to get you and Mike Mooneyham on the show at the same time, too. Just because I would love this, being a kid from that era who was heavily influenced by the NWA and got all the shows, just to sit there and talk about the 80s and the Carolinas would be absolutely awesome. But BleacherReport.com, at MMA Encyclopedia on Twitter. What are some other ways any people can reach you?
Oh, those are the ways.
Okay, good. I don't know. People have Facebook, everything else, you know.
I
don't know.
I do have a Facebook. It's MMA Encyclopedia, I guess. However you do Facebook, I don't know.
If you're Les Thatcher, you don't do it at all. Just thank you again so very much, and we'll be back, everybody, right after this break.
Hi, this is Sugarland here for RAD,
the entertainment industry's voice for road safety. Music is one of the most important things in our lives, but nothing is more important than life itself. Music lives, and so should you. Please plan ahead. Designate before you celebrate.
Friends don't let friends
drive drunk.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hi, NBA forward Kevin Durant from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Here with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
And that's a slam dunk.
Whether you like to shoot hoops like me, skateboard, ride a bike,
or dance on your roof, just move it your way.
For an hour a day. Because moving every day puts you on the offense towards a stronger you.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Bugs.
So be a player.
Be a player.
Get up, play, and move it your way. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
You said it at www.letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? What happened in Columbus on my birthday? Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Lots of people talk about the ways that schools should inspire students to be creative. I'm Mary Chapin Carpenter. Business and education leaders say that young workers too often lack the creativity needed to remain flexible and excel on the job. Well, helping young minds tap their creativity is just as important as mastering math and English skills. When you look at today's educational landscape, one of the best places that creativity is actively encouraged is in music class. Music classrooms today are like deep wells of creative energy just waiting to be explored by young minds. Don't let it go to waste.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, Gibson Guitar, Baldwin Piano, and this station. March is Music in Our Schools Month. Music, part of a sound education.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
Hey, parents. Introducing the Communicizer. Go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
I love you, Dad.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
All right, Mike Sempervivi back here with Bob Evans, although you wouldn't know that here on Ringside Wrap. In that last segment, I just kind of sucked all the air out of the room and asked all the questions. And, Bob, I apologize for that, but I think I can make it back up to you with ideas for some of your merchandise, including Steve Martin from The Jerk. Did you see that movie?
I did. I saw it a couple times. Yeah, great movie.
Remember how he just wanted to be somebody? And can you imagine him on a T-shirt, you know, holding up the newspaper and talking about how he can be somebody, and it's a picture of you with the B-E being Bob Evans?
That's good. I like that. Actually, one of the guys, John Rodeo, who actually used to manage me way back in the day on the aforementioned Tony Rumble shows, actually had a similar thing where it said, B-E, all you can be. So I like that. Actually, I do have a couple of merchandise ideas. The hashtag Why Not Bob thing kind of took off a little bit. So I know you were saying that in jest, but I actually had a serious answer to your question. But
I'm 39 and proud.
Yeah, 39 and proud. You know, changing minds. You know, this is all I'm getting a lot of. Great advice, great wrestling advice from watching different things. You know, watch America's Got Talent this year, aside from the lying piece of garbage serviceman who decided to take advantage of the system, but he'll be thrown out. I don't know if you've heard about that, but there was a guy who greatly exaggerated his terms in the National Guard, his terms of service in the National Guard, and made up a story. Ooh. About how he actually worked the stutter, which got a lot of sympathy with the crowd. So Stern was talking about it this morning. But it was America's Got Talent. It was hilarious. I'm watching this comedian called Tom Cotter, and I actually reached out towards Facebook because very interesting stuff. Where he's a 23 year comedian. He's actually had some success, but he feels like he's flown under the radar. He's had a Comedy Central half-hour special, but he's still kicking around in the clubs. So he goes on America's Got Talent, and he just crushes. He just does great. And Howie Mandel says, I've never heard of you. But and then, you know, Tom says, hey, I'm a big fan of yours, Howie. And Howie's like, well, I'm a big fan of yours now. And it was just this life – you could just see the life-changing moment, because Howie said, you will get work out of this. You know, and it was just one of those things where it's like you see somebody's career change before their very eyes. So it moved me so much. I reached out to the guy, and he actually emailed me back with some nice words back of encouragement. So, but that's something you have to watch, because Howie saw this 23-year-old guy and said, 23-year experienced guy, and said, I can see you're polished. I can see you're ready. I know what your character is. It was everything that you would hear from John Laurinaitis. It was everything you'd hear from Jim Ross. It was everything you hear from Jim Cornette, you know, and it was, I found it to be really, really interesting. I recommend that young wrestlers should be listening to every stand-up comedian's podcast they can, not just the silly stuff, but the stuff about the struggle and going to the clubs and trying out new material and connecting with the people, because that's the closest thing we have in the entertainment business. And I guarantee they should be listening to all that stuff, and they should be watching talent shows and seeing what they're looking for, because a lot of the critiques that they give the people are the critiques that we get. You know, if you're not prepared, this is where talent, if you have raw talent, that's one thing. But if you're not prepared and you're not ready when you get that shot in front of 10 million people, you're going to look like a fool if you're a pretender. So be prepared and be very aware of your talent.
Well, a lot of people laugh at that concept too, but you know, everything is performance art, and a lot of the crossover people, that's when people will snicker a little bit when they'll hear America's Got Talent or Dancing with the Stars, which is my favorite show because I love women's thighs.
Sure.
Or any of those shows, American Idol, any of that stuff, why it can gravitate and take a especially an older school pro wrestling fan or worker, and the casual fan that you love sucking into stories. Like, I mean, my wife knows a little bit about stuff, but, you know, what does she get sucked into? Things like Tough Enough. She got sucked into the Ultimate Fighter show. She's not going to sit down and plan her time around watching something like that, but it sucks them in. And,
I actually
will
promise you Luke Robinson is a guest one of these days, too. So Luke is Luke is a personal friend and probably one of the smartest young guys that's come around in the past 20 years as far as, you know, WWE thinks they got him figured out. They got a lot of things. They got a lot of things coming to him. This kid is a brilliant, brilliant kid. I'm real happy that he is prospering greatly after. You know, he's still in wrestling, but he's not waiting for the call.
No, and he's not going to be on the 3-hour Raw Monday. And you know, talking about like performance art, and you talk about, you know, guys like Jericho and Trish Stratus and Colt Cabana and guys who go out there and do comedy and do improv and stuff like that. It seemed to have helped their character, and if more guys were doing that, I probably wouldn't have as much of a fear about this 3-hour Raw, or for that matter, a live Impact, where, you know, there have been production issues in the past. I know Dave Lagana is done a really good job there. Everybody, I think, has done a really good job there.
My boy Dave, shout out to you, Lagana. I haven't talked to you in a while.
You know,
shout out to Dave Lagana, my man.
Absolutely. No more I Want Wrestling anymore, but just go to at Lagana for the Twitter feed, and it'd be one of his 30,000 followers or whatever is now, some insane amount. But
hey, I tell you what, though, the shows have gotten better since he's gotten over there. It's got to have something
noticeably
to do with it, you know? Yeah.
Hey, look, you know, I'm sorry. I know a lot of people may be sick of it. I'm not. The whole Joseph Park Esquire character, and I mean, making Abyss a character I care about is amazing, but I know Rich will be killing me if I don't give you a chance to talk for a couple minutes here just about Raw and about Impact and what's going on right now and your perspective on what they're going into. 3-hour Raw next week with Vince McMahon leading the way, apparently right there at 8 o'clock with John Laurinaitis giving him this performance review, and the fact that Impact football is going to be 16 weeks in this year, and they're trying to switch things up and get a jump at 8 o'clock. Where do you see them standing right now, both companies?
Well, I mean, I can't, I'll, you know, there's some things I can't talk about that get me excited about maybe a 3-hour Raw, that they might be expanding the roster, you know, because that gives more opportunities for some guys. I know the last time they were in New England, they had their eyes on quite a few guys from the New England area who, not necessarily that I've trained, but I've helped to mentor or worked with or tried to guide along the best I could, along with their quality training. And, you know, they were very happy with a lot of the people they saw in New England. So I think if there's more airtime, then maybe there'll be more time for some of the young guys to move up. And that just, you know, that interests me. I'm hoping that they'll give the guys a few more minutes to tell the stories in their matches rather than have a 10-minute interview segment. I'd rather see them add the time to matches. I don't think people are bored by matches. I don't think people are bored by in-ring activity. I think they should have, obviously, am I going to give them more time to wrestle or give them more time to talk? Well, it's maybe if we have 10 extra minutes, let's give them 5 and 5. You know, give these guys a chance to express themselves. Give these guys a chance to express themselves in and out of the ring. But that's, you know, that's personal taste and not necessarily what they'll do. as far as TNA goes, I think it's a good move. I think, you know, I have a lot of friends in TNA. I'm excited for the people that are there. We don't write off Alex Silva. I've seen Alex Silva do very well. I was there when he got invited to the OVW school, and I thought very highly of him back then when he was a Portuguese kid from Canada, which was strange to me, but that was almost 2 years ago, and he's made a lot of progress. You haven't seen – everybody's really down on Alex Silva because of a 90-second match he had with Robbie E. I don't think that's the best you're going to see from Alex Silva. I think he has a lot to offer. What do you think about the Joey Ryan situation? I'm still torn on that.
Wait, about what? About the whole –
the whole, like, what, I mean, do you think he deserved to, do you think, I've never been a huge, sorry, Joey, but I've never been a huge fan, so it's, you know, I really can't see him. I think, I agree with Meltzer on this. Meltzer thought he would possibly be, like, an opening match guy and never would really contribute to the bottom line, and I kind of agree, you know, so.
Yeah, I think he could sell some merch for you, and I think, you know, at least short term, it would be something that I think probably could have worked. My problem is the whole concept behind it. I hate the insider thing and the way it's presented. If it was presented to me more of an old school fashion of these guys are being trained right now by Al Snow and Danny Davis and OVW. Al Snow is not a character on OVW TV or anything, but they did actually, I was looking at Trent Van Dries's report on it, and they did bring back Ken Wayne, his old tag partner, to play a role in this last TV taping. But I think if they present those guys with this is their shot, and Joey Ryan's been working for PWG, I mean, it's not like TNA is in competition with PWG's DVD sales or anything. So mention that he's on the come up or something like that. I mean, if you don't want to mention Dragon Gate or Ring of Honor, fine, but you can mention, I think, ROH or PWG or one of a number of other companies and be okay with it and present it as they're trying to get their crack on the roster and have the verbal part, have them be put on the spot. I'm not, you know, NXT made a mockery of it, but in a way, you know, how do I know if I want to see you on TV every week if you can't talk? You know, again, right. I am a product of the 80s, and that's, you know, I'll take my Dean Malenko and Chris Benoit, and there's always a place for those guys, but, you know, with how they're being pushed and presented, you know, in this scenario, I would rather see that. I mean, if they're not going to be, you know, invited in another way and you accept to do this, you have to know you have to talk. If you're not ready yet, don't do it and try to get another way in, wrestle your way in. But how the whole thing's been presented, I think I'd like it more if it's sporting as opposed to what they're doing. Because I think, again, I don't know how many porn stash shirts you could sell, but I bet you could make, you know, you could sell enough of them where, you know, I think he's got more upside in a lot of ways than, say, Shima Ion, who they are high on. And then nothing against him or anything, but, you know, it came down to me picking a guy who I think I can make some money with and have good matches with Aries or, you know, down the line, I think it would be Joey Ryan.
Yeah, I just, you know, I see so much potential for that gut check deal, and I really hope I hope they're looking at women too, because I think Taylor Hendricks, obviously, she's, you know, like sister to me, and I had a lot to do with her early development in wrestling. But I'm excited about opportunity of maybe she'll get a chance to show her stuff. I mean, she's, you know, in my opinion, she's money waiting to happen. So, you know, but that's, you know, that's neither here nor there. But I love the concept of the gut check. I love it. But I think they should give the guys an honest 5 or 6 minute match. What's wrong with that? You know, give them somebody good to work with. So there's no, you know, like I said, you know, not that Robbie E's not good, but he's not particularly experienced as far as carrying people. Plus, 2 minutes is impossible. You know, I mean, obviously Joey did better with Austin Aries, but they're boys, they're friends. So it's hard to judge that too. So, but I mean, at least they had a little more time. So, I don't know. I mean, like I said, I'm torn on it, and I always want to see somebody, if there's a chance to get a job, to get the job. So, because it ain't my spot, so take it, you know. So I'm happy for guys when they get a chance to get employment, but, you know, I don't know if it was handled particularly well. I don't know if the whole thing's an angle. I don't know if I'm being worked here. You know, it's just, you know, typical wrestling silliness. So,
speaking of silliness, boxing silliness taking place this weekend. It's not silliness, I guess, but Manny Pacquiao fighting Timothy Bradley in a fight that no one was clamoring to see. Although Manny Pacquiao needs to fight, Timothy Bradley is a big fight for him. It'll be a good payday for him. This is probably a 350,000 buy fight, which
he's
will
got a
rub
good story.
It in from, well, that's it's not a bad story, but I don't think it's been able to grasp out and reach anybody. I am happy with the synergy that HBO has developed with CNN, where they air these 24/7s that they do.
Yep.
On CNN. I think that's fantastic. They do it about midnight on a Saturday night, which is not great, but still, I mean, it's something. But I just don't think they're going to be able to drag in. I don't think they're going to be able to drag in the public with this, and it's going to be, you know, Floyd Mayweather be laughing from his jail cell in Las Vegas about being the greatest pay-per-view draw and how bad Manny needs him, and will probably complain about his 60-40 split or whatever he wants. Probably be 80-20 by the time he comes out and complains about this. But, you know, that's the only fight out there. It's not going to happen until at least next year with the way everything looks. But do you have ever any interest in ordering any of these boxing pay-per-views? Or if you're not that big of a boxing guy, even your boxing friends, if you have any, I mean, do they bite on things like Pacquiao?
No, usually I get the few people see it and they hear it, but most of the time I hear from you guys. You guys report on it, and that's where I get my boxing news. I'm not a huge boxing fan. I know some of the guys, like TJ Perkins, takes boxing lessons and is very adept at it. So a few of the guys in Ring of Honor have a boxing background, but really I hear more about it from, or my, you know, Adam Kroll is a big boxing fan. I listen to his podcast, so he may mention it, you know. And like I said, that the fella who's boxing Manny Pacquiao has a real good story about being broke and how his wife stuck by him and, you know, how they didn't have any money. And then he won a fight and then he won another fight and now they're a lot more comfortable. And it was just a great story. And I really thought that would, you know, touch the American public a little more, but I don't think they've gotten that word out enough. So like you said, you know, I think that could have been marketed a little stronger. So I assume the gentleman is an underdog by leaps and bounds.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll pull up. I'll get it here even if it's after the break, coming back with Bobby Simmons in a few minutes. I'll pull up exactly what it is. Boxing, mixed martial arts, obviously, you know, there's a relative malaise going on right now amongst everybody. And one thing we didn't get a chance to touch on earlier, and I haven't had a chance to talk to you about, at least on the air in the next couple of minutes here, obviously ROH went through some rough patches there with the whole pay-per-view.
Absolutely, sure.
Debacle, and this last one this time around as well, they didn't make good 2 weeks ago on TV. By giving you the Border Wars main event, which was a very good one with Steen and Richards. They gave you that for free, and they're making amends. But how was – boy, I tell you what, because you were involved in good stuff on that show, how was the feeling getting back to the back? And was it ongoing through the show? Did the guys know they were having problems? Did they know the level of it? What was it like to come back and be deflated? If you were afterwards, of Jesus, nobody got a chance to see this great thing that we did. Just where was your head at? Where were the guys' heads at? And where are they at right now with some of the amends that Joe Koff has made and the whole nine yards?
Well, I mean, the one thing I can say about those guys is they had already formulated a plan. We knew very early on that things weren't going according to plan. Nobody was panicking. Nobody was freaking out or anything like that. But they just said, hey, yeah, we're going to keep working on it. And then, but we knew that the only thing we could do, and everybody kind of had the same idea. It wasn't like we all got around in a circle and, you know, did Ring Around the Rosie and did Kumbaya. But we all knew that the only thing we could do, that the only thing that was in our control as the talent was to put on the best show we possibly could. Was to, you know, we had a banged out crowd in Toronto. I mean, you know, fantastic crowd. You know, I've been to Toronto twice and it's fantastic both times. Just great, great fans. You know, they don't always like us, but boy, do they react. And, you know, just involved in everything and behind the product and very supportive. And that's all we could do. All we could do is wrestle our asses off and give the people the most competitive, in, you know, fights we could give them. And that's all we had to do. That's all we had in front of us. I know Joe Koff went to the creative team and basically just said, look, this is on our end. It's not your fault. You guys put on a great event here. You made the matches that people wanted to see. So Joe was owning it right away. So there was nothing, there was no finger pointing. It was just kind of like after half an hour, 45 minutes, you just kind of like almost smiling about it, saying, look, this is just the way it's going to be. And then they had already formulated a plan, like we're given, you know, we can't let this go again. And this came right from management, and they said it right to me. I said, how's it going? And they, you know, they said, well, it's not going well. I said, but we already have a plan. We're going to give them Best of the World for free. It's what we can do. And I said, that sounds like a fair thing. And, you know, it sucks. It's bad. But I think the reports of Ring of Honor's doom and gloom is, you know, they're going to fix it. They're going to fix it. They're going to make it right. In my opinion, they've already made it right by giving people, it's going to be a top quality pay-per-view for free, and the people that order it are going to get their money's worth. And, you know, we've already heard good, you know, we heard good things about the quality of the feed, that the feed was excellent, the sound was excellent, and we know the show was excellent. So I think that, you know, you just have to go through it. It's growing pains, it's mistakes, it's people who haven't done this kind of thing making misjudgments and learning from them. That's the only thing you can do in business. And, you know, I've run businesses. That's all you can do. When you screw up and you say, hey, I screwed up, and own it, you know, and that's what Joe did. That's what the management team did. And I'm proud of them. And we're going to tackle this and make it right and move forward. And there's going to be, you know, that's why the people need to stick with us. I mean, that's, you know, and I'm not begging anybody. I understand. I'd be pissed off too, because it was a good show and I missed a good show, but you watch the replay, you know, and you it's not a live experience, I realize that, but, you know, I think we're doing the best we can by giving them Best of the World for free, and going to give them a good product. I've already heard some of the matches laid out for the summer and moving forward, and it's going to be exciting. It's going to be a great middle of the year. So best advice I can give people is just if you haven't seen Ring of Honor, turn it on, check it out. You know, and give management your opinions. If you don't agree with it, give them your opinion. Don't just bitch on a message board. You know, tell them what you think. Go up to Joe Koff at a show and tell them what you think. Go up to Jim Cornette, you know. Don't get in a line and beat him up. But, I mean, if there's something you want to see,
no, wait.
Demand it.
Be very careful about going up to Jim Cornette.
Oh, come on. He's a different man now.
Well,
as far as you know.
Well, that's, yeah. Just don't hit me, Jen. Jim is... That was this on Saturday, too. The first time I met Jim Cornette was Maryland Championship Wrestling Show. My buddy, who was a film student at Towson at the time, and his father had done a lot of extra work on Homicide and things like that, shows mm-hmm. in Baltimore. We jumped in, and we were able to talk him into, you know, letting us film some stuff, and it would help guys with promos and things like that. So Axel and Corporal Punishment, a guy by the name of Danny, Mark Schrager, they all let us do it. Got a chance to meet Cornette on that first show, and he was not the, you know, I know he's lost some weight, even though he does the Now with Tomato website. He's tried to be a little more careful, but at that time, he was big. You know, he's just a big dude and with a big, loud voice, and, you know, was always amped up. But to see his size, and, you know, it was kind of deceptive. Stan Lane and Bobby Eaton, when you look back, it's like, well, yeah, God, you realize how big of a guy Jim Cornette was, unless he was standing next to Big Bubba Rogers. But I tell you, that was almost a really intimidating situation, rolling up, meeting him for the first time with those glasses, and that, you know, that big mouth going, and the colorful suit he had on. It was it was a hell of an experience. So, and Jim Cornette, who smacked around Santino Marella, makes no bones about that. Be careful what you say to Jim Cornette.
Exactly. I mean, he's a wonderful guy, and I haven't heard the snapping of you know, Jimmy in a long time, but I don't want to either.
Another wonderful guy is actually waiting here on the line right now. So Bobby Simmons is going to be joining us here right after the break, and we're going to go to that right now on Ringside Wrap.
Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m., Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
Hi, I'm Jody Peterman. We know that no one understands what you need better than you do. We take care to guide you through the legal process, ensuring that you're able to make the decisions that are best for you. If you have a personal injury, criminal, or family law issue, please take a look at our website to learn more about our practice. We offer a free initial consultation for personal injury cases. Give us a call at 229-375-5680. We have a reputation for being accessible and treating our clients well. We look forward to hearing from you.
Hello, I'm Guy Terry of Terry and Peterman. At Terry and Peterman, we are committed to representing the hardworking residents of South Georgia in personal injury, criminal, and family law matters. For years, we have worked with college students in this area to ensure legal issues do not disrupt their academic careers. We also represent military families struggling with divorce and family law issues. We rely upon over 30 years of combined experience to provide aggressive representation for our clients.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling
at the Academy Theater in Avondale State.
We're also at the Masquerade every month or so.
Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Championship Wrestling.
And you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire,
formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling.
We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there.
We're back here on Ringside Rap. Mike Sempervivi joined alongside Bob Evans going in this week for Les Thatcher. And we're very happy to welcome on a guy you can hear every Thursday night on this very radio network alongside Mike Norris and Jerry Yotes, longtime professional wrestling referee and jack-of-all-trades, really, down there in Georgia. Bobby Simmons on the line with us. Bobby, how are you doing this evening?
I am doing wonderful. Great to be with you guys tonight. Jack-of-all-trades, that pretty well sums it up. What nobody else wanted to do, come find Bobby. That was my career.
Hey, you want to work in the business, right, boy?
Hey. Listen, where else can you make a 4.5-hour trip, sit in the dressing room an hour, work 2 hours, make a 4.5-hour ride home, make $15, but you were in the business. I mean, you know, you just had to love it.
$15? Geez, were you in the main event?
Jeez. 1972, that was a guarantee in Georgia, $15.
Well, you'll be happy to know, Bobby, that we still get $15 to this day, so that's good. So
tradition lives. Bobby, I couldn't believe I stumbled on YouTube. This is such a horror to watch stuff, especially older stuff so much. I can't believe I stumbled upon it, because these are clips that I can't believe, and it's a damn good cut of it. 1973 is what the date says. Georgia heavyweight title, Cowboy Bill Watts and Mr. Wrestling. I asked Les about it. I believe it was last week on the show. He said that was the first show we would have done, because he was sitting alongside Gordon Sully, introduces him. It was the first show they would have done. Now, you being around in that era, were you still working for Ann Gunkel at the time?
I was still working for Ann. I worked for Ann from 72 to 74. And from November of 72, we went in business, and we did our last show in November of 74. We would come in and do our show immediately after they did theirs.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. If that would have been the case already with this, and, you know, we've talked about it a little bit, and I think you guys have too, where, you know, a lot of the boys were just like, you know, hey, it's a business, no problem there. But how many tense moments – how many tense moments were there in that studio with that whole scenario?
You know, I heard that Ricky Hunter, who was working for us as the Super Gladiator, I heard he had a run-in with Jack Briscoe out in the parking lot. There might have been some other stuff that, you know, just a lot of it was guys talking in passing. But you got to remember, when Ann Gunkel went in business, out of the 34 people that were – I was actually working for the office. I wasn't refereeing yet. But out of the 34 wrestlers and the three or four referees that were in Georgia at the time, when Ann went in business, 32 of those 34 wrestlers went with her. So it wasn't like they were dealing with guys that, you know, were just trying to get started. I mean, we had guys working for Ann. You know, we had Dick Steinborn. We had Jody Hamilton, Tom Ernesto, Rock Hunter. I mean, we had guys that had main evented all over the country. So there wasn't as much of that as people had let it on to be. Most of it was, I mean, you know, there was a lot of guys trying to get the guys to abandon ship and go somewhere else, but there was very little of that. I mean, I was just breaking into business, and nobody ever said a word to me. I was reversing this scenario in November of 1974, Ann had 32 wrestlers on her roster. And when we ran our last show on a Friday night, I went to the office that Saturday, was introduced to Jim Barnett, and that Monday morning I walked into Georgia Championship Wrestling as a referee over there. And I was the only person out of that whole roster that went from one office to the other office and had a job. And it was never mentioned to me. There was nothing ever said about it. The guys treated me, they treated me wonderfully. So, and a lot of that, I think, has been blown way out of proportion because it just wasn't that bad, not as far as between the two guys. We were all just trying to make a living.
Well, Tom Ernesto, I guess, would come over later on, or I know he was always – there's always been back and forth with how much his involvement was, and, you know, that there are diehards that swear to this day, well, damn it, he tried to sing against promotion or anything like that, but he ended up coming back over. Was there any – I mean, why – did you ever – I guess you never asked why you, but was there ever any feeling looking back? Did you ever – pieced it together on why of all everybody they could bring in, why you? Or were you just that damn good at the time, starting off that early?
Well, he was that good. He was a wonderful booker. He made a lot of money for a lot of promoters that he worked for. But, you know, I mean, there are guys out there. Tom Ernesto was my friend. His two sons, Timmy and Tom Jr., are my friends, and I would never do anything to harm that friendship, but my personal gut feeling is they got to him. I mean, I believe Barnett, you know, I can't help but think that. And I may be wrong. That's just my opinion. And but, yeah, he about 8 weeks after I had been over there, Tom came in as the booker. And you know, it was just – I seen working for Ann, the level of talent kept going downhill. Part of that was guys were leaving. They could see the writing on the wall. They were leaving. Part of that, I think Tom was using guys that he wouldn't normally use because, there again, I can't help but think that, you know, maybe he had been gotten to a little bit. And there's people that'll swear he was got to, and there was others that'll swear he won't. I don't know. Nobody knows for sure but Tom, and he's not here anymore.
There's always a whole lot of passion on this website about that one, although it's really not as, you know, it happened everywhere. It happened with lots of people for lots of different reasons over time, and you know, why would it be that big of a shock if it did actually take place? And really, when you look at it, do you blame the man? You get the mighty National Wrestling Alliance, you get kids to feed and the whole nine yards. And that's only if that scenario actually happened. But, hey, it was a long time ago, and really, it doesn't really matter. It builds into the lore of how everything went. And, you know, watching that show, and again, you know, that four-hour block that was going on in Georgia at the time, how much were you working, and did it just happen organically where you just became that jack of all trades we talked about at the beginning, where you just started learning different roles and doing different things?
I started out working for Charlie Harbin, who was Ray Gunkel's office manager in 1969. I started running errands. I was 14 years old, and I lived fairly close to the wrestling office. I would go over there. He'd send me to the cafe. He'd send me to the store. He'd have me go paint, spray paint ring posts. Just, you know, he was just letting he liked me. He just, for some reason, me and him got along, and he hired me to put up the TV ring at the TV station. So I learned from the ground up. I learned how to put the ring up. I learned how to build them. I learned how to rebuild them. And then when I went to work for Ann, Tom gave me a shot and gave me a break as a referee, and of course that's what I did mostly in the business. But I also, I would, when I was working for Ann, I would fill in under a mask if they needed a body somewhere. So I was wrestling a little bit. And when I came over to Barnett's office, my official duties were referee and hang around the office during the day to help with whatever may need to go on there. They broke me into work. Office taught me how to run the ticket office for the Atlanta shows. When Doug Smith in 1978 or 79, when Doug Smith, who was the office manager for Barnett, decided to retire from the business and go do something else, they put me back there just to do what I could do until Barnett could hire somebody. And when I got back there, Barnett said, "I never realized you could do this." And next thing I knew, I had the title of office manager and sort of became Barnett's assistant, and the refereeing faded out, and that's what I did until I left in December of 83.
Now, I did, Bob, you know, I'm taking all the air out of the room again here. You know, I obviously have never wrestled in this business, refereed in it, or almost anything else for that matter, but you guys obviously have, and you got anything for Bobby?
No, I'm just loving this, man. I mean, it's I really enjoy listening to a lot of the old school stuff. You know, I don't know if I'm a historian, but I certainly love the stories, and I love when Les comes on and talks about the Atlanta days, and I'm just digging it. You know, Bobby, how much do you follow the business now?
Very
I'm
little.
Sorry, I don't catch your show as much as I'd like to. So
very little. I probably see 3-4 independent shows a year. If I'm flipping channels and I see something on Monday night or Friday night that catches my eye, I may stop for 5-10 minutes, but very little. My main thing with the business now is every day, part of my morning, every day when I get to my office is I get a cup of coffee, I go to the GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com website, and I watch the clip of the day. I sit there today, I watch that little 8-minute clip today of Rocca and Thez. And it just, it went over in my mind so many times. I grew up as a fan. I started going to matches in Atlanta when I was 6. And I mean, I'm the most blessed individual that's ever drew a breath because I got to live out my dreams. But one of the great things in my life that I treasure was Lou Thez knew me on a first-name basis.
Oh, that's great.
And I sat there today and I watched this, and I thought, I don't think people really realize how good Thez was. He was able to go an hour with Rocca and make Rocca look good, and that's darn near impossible because Rocca was, he was like Ringling Brothers. You saw him, and that was it.
Yeah.
But, I watched that 8-minute clip today and thought, man, what I really miss those days.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously I'm a little after you, but I still pine away for the time when I started in the early to mid '80s. You know, I mean, we talk about it quite a bit, how much the business has changed. I think, and I think one of the things that's really helped me in my, you know, I'm 39 now, but I'm actually just hitting my stride as far as being a worker and you know, trying to bring back some of the tradition. You know, obviously trying to marry the new and the old. But I've really gotten the benefit out of watching YouTube clips and stuff and borrowing from the past. And I wish more guys would do that. I think they think it's just going to be a bunch of guys in black trunks, you know, exchanging head scissors for 45 minutes. And it's just it's so different. If you can really dig into it and watch a bunch of different stuff and educate yourself as to what's going on, I really think a lot of the young guys would get a lot of benefit out of it. And I know when I train guys, and I mentor quite a few guys here up in the New England and Northeast, and I really try to reach out to them and tell them, say, borrow from the past because it still works. The stuff
still
works.
Yeah, it does. That's the thing I think that frustrates me so bad is the newer guys, they'll come up and they'll ask you, well, I'll give you an example. There's a young kid here in Georgia that was trying to promote some shows, and he came down to our Gulf Coast reunion several years ago, and he brought a VCR and a tape down, and he said, "I want you to watch my TV show." He said, "I got a 30-minute cable show." He said, "I want you to watch my show," and he said, "I want you to give me your honest opinion." So I did. I watched it. And he came down to the room, and he said, "Well, what'd you think?" And I said, "Well, how about watching it with me, and let's watch something?" And I said, "I just want to watch the first match." And it was about 8 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched guys go off the top rope through tables. I watched them do all sorts of stuff. And the people were, you know, into it a little bit. And when he got through, and we got through with the match, I asked the kid, I said, "Tell me what is missing from that match." And he says, "Well, they had the crowd into it, and it's doing this, and it's doing that." And I said, "Let's go back and watch it again." And I said, "You tell me to stop when you see the first wrestling hold." When we see the first one, you stop me. And for another 8 minutes of watching it again, he never stopped me. Mm. That's the thing that we miss. It's being able to fly and take all the bumps. That's a wonderful thing. It is. I mean, the guys today do stuff that I never dreamed of doing.
Yep.
I don't know if that makes them smarter or me smarter. I'm not sure. I hadn't figured that part out yet. But one thing that I do know is this. If you take those bumps and they don't mean anything.
Right.
You know, there's only so many bumps in your body. I don't care how strong you are, how smart you are, how good a shape you're in. There's only so many there. At some point, your body's going to say, "Okay, that's enough."
Absolutely.
You know, you got to make them mean something. You've got to make them mean something. And if people would get back to that and begin to tell a story again and build whatever and then do something fantastic, they would be absolutely amazed how the people would buy it.
I agree. When I run classes, I usually try to have a couple of guys that I wrestle quite regularly there. And I'll turn to them and I'll say, "Have I ever, you know," because I get a reputation for being a quote-unquote old school guy. And I turn to him and I'll say, you know, I'll say, "Have I ever told you that not to do something? Have I ever not let you do something?" And they go, "Well, there's been a few things." I say, "Wait a minute, let's think about it though. I did let you do that big move, but I did it because I don't want you to waste it. I want you to do it when it absolutely means everything to the match and it's the big exclamation point on the end of a sentence."
There you go.
Yeah, I think that's what's missing. I think we don't have any sentences anymore. We just have big run-on paragraphs, and there's nothing. I was talking about it earlier with Mike. There's no room to breathe. There's no room to tell the story you need to tell. And I'm not just parroting back to you. I live this message. You know, it's because we can all because there's plenty of guys that'll tell you what you need to hear, but we need more guys that are actually doing it in the ring that aren't afraid.
And the sad part is, my friend, is it's not necessarily the guy's fault. We worked every night. We worked 7 days a week, sometimes two shows on Sunday. We honed our craft in front of a crowd, and we were able to, you know. People ask me all the time, they'll say, "Well, what's your greatest memory? What was your greatest, you know?" The thing I think that I'm most proud of is, and we worked in Georgia, of course. We run the same towns every week. Monday night was Augusta, every Friday night was Atlanta. We worked in front of the same people on a weekly basis, and they sat 6 feet from the ring. And they all thought they knew what was going on. But them people that thought they knew what was going on would always end their sentence by, "But I was there the night that such and such really got mad at such and such. I know that was real." You know, so that's the thing I was most proud of. We were that good. I mean, I was good enough to stay out of the way and let these guys do what they did. But, you know, if we ever can get back to that, and people that say it's boring and it's no good, they've never had a hammerlock put on them by a police officer.
Well, that's one of the things I try to that's one of the things I try to teach the guys. I said, put it on. There's a show way of putting it on, and there's a shoot way of putting it on, but not just cramming down on the pressure. And they go, "Well, why do you teach me that one?" I said, "Because if a buddy in his bar calls us a bunch of phonies and puts it on, he dislocates his buddy's shoulder, and we lose $1 million." So,
Mike Mooneyham, the guy, the newspaper writer out of the Carolinas. He had a picture of Gene Anderson on Facebook today, and he was making a comment about Gene. Gene was the nicest guy and just a true gentleman in this business. But Gene's philosophy of working was this: loosen a few teeth, just don't knock any out. And that's the way we should do it.
Gentlemen, on that note, I hate to say we've got to wrap this up.
You got to end it on that.
Going on.
There's nothing else you can say. You got to end it on that.
Hey, we wanted to hear about tomorrow because, Bobby, what do you guys got coming up tomorrow night on
Tuesday? Bill White is going to join us tomorrow night. Bill wrestled all over the world for a lot of years, and Bill's going to join us tomorrow night, and we're going to talk about his career.
Awesome. And, Mr. Evans, what do you have coming up here in the near future?
Well, at Brutal Bob Evans on Twitter, of course, and coming up, we have the iPay-Per-View, Best in the World, June 24th, and for Ring of Honor, of course, and TV tapings in Baltimore at the end of the month with a certain special someone probably wrestling on that, so keep your eye out for that, and all kinds of tons of fun. You know, I'm always full of surprises, so.
We got another surprise for everybody listening. Next week on the show, Billy Robinson, former AWA champion, is going to be on talking about his new book as well, and obviously, if you want to hear more of me, and God bless you if you do, Wrestling Observer Live with Brian Alvarez and I, Sunday, 6 to 8, a bunch of different ways you can hear it on Sirius Sports Byline Radio Network. Just go to the Observer site to find out the information on that. And for everybody, Les out there in the abyss, we're going to see everybody next week. Thank you, guys.
Good night. Thanks, guys.
Good night.
For listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.